across time and space for each other. Recently, I had two subjects who were best friends and came to me at the same time for regression. Not only had they been soulmates in many former lives on Earth, but were also mated as fish, like intelligent beings in a beautiful water world. Both recalled the enjoyment of playing underwater with their strong appendages and coming up to the surface, to peek. Neither subject could recall much about this planet or what happened to their race of sea creatures. Perhaps they were part of a failed Earth experiment long before a land mammal developed into the most promising species on Earth for souls. I suspect it was not Earth because I have had others who tell of living in an aquatic environment they know was unearthly. One of these subjects said, "My water world was very warm and clear because we had three suns overhead. The total lack of darkness underwater was comforting and made building our dwellings much easier. I have often wondered if the dreams we have at night about flying, breathing underwater, and performing other non-human physical feats relate to our earlier physical experiences in other environments. In the early days of my studies of souls, I half expected that those subjects who could recall other worlds would say they had lived in our galaxy within the neighborhood of the sun. This assumption was naive. Earth is in a sparse section of the Milky Way with only 8 stars that are 10 light years from the sun. We know our own galaxy has more than 200 billion stars within a universe currently speculated at 100 billion galaxies. The worlds around the suns which might support life are staggering to the imagination. Consider, if only a small fraction of 1% of the stars in our galaxy had planets with intelligent life useful to souls, the number would still be in the millions. From what I can gather from subjects willing and able to discuss former assignments, souls are sent to any world with suitable intelligent life forms. Out of all the stars which are known to us, only 4% are like our sun. Apparently this means nothing to souls. Their planetary incarnations are not linked to Earth-type worlds or with intelligent bipeds who walk on land. Souls who have been to other worlds tell me they have a fondness for certain ones and return to them, like Earth, periodically for a succession of lives. I have not had many subjects who are able to recall specific details about living on other worlds. This may be due to lack of experience, a suppression of memory, or blocks imposed by master guides to avoid any discomfort from flashbacks in non-earthly bodies. Those subjects who are able to discuss their experiences on other worlds tell me that before coming to Earth, souls are frequently placed in the bodies of creatures with less intelligence than human beings, unlike Theseus' case. However, once in a human body, souls are not sent back down the mental evolutionary ladder. Yet, physical contrasts can be stark and side trips away from Earth are not necessarily pleasant. One mid-level client of mine expressed it this way. After a long series of human lives, I told my guide I needed a break from Earth for a while in another kind of environment. He warned me, "You might not like this change right now because you have become so accustomed to the attributes of the human mind and body." My client persisted and was duly given life on what was described as a pastel world living among a race of small, thickly set beings. They were a thoughtful but somber people with tiny chalk, white faces which never smiled. Without human laughter and physical flexibility, I was out of sync and made little progress. The assignment must have been particularly difficult for this individual when we consider that humor and laughter is such a hallmark of soul life in the spirit world. I was now approaching the final phase of my session with Case 23. It was necessary to apply additional deepening techniques because I wanted Thies to reach into the highest recesses of her superconscious mind to talk with me about space, time and the source. Dr. Newton, Thies, we are coming to the end of our time together and I want you to turn your mind once again to the source, creator. Pause, will you do that for me? S, yes. Dr. Newton, you said the ultimate objective of souls was to seek unification with the supreme source of creative energy, do you remember? S, the act of conjunction, yes. Dr. Newton, Tell me, does the source dwell in some special central space in the spirit world? S. The source is the spirit world. Dr. Newton, then why do souls speak of reaching a core of spiritual life? S. When we are young spirits, we sense power around us everywhere, and yet we feel we are on the edge of it. As we grow older, there is an awareness of a concentrated power, but it is the same feeling. Dr. Newton, even though you have called this the place of the old ones? S. Yes, they are part of the concentrated power of the source which sustains us as souls. Dr. Newton, well, lumping this power together as one energy source, can you describe the Creator in more human terms? S. As the ultimate selfless being which we strive to be. Dr. Newton, if the source represents all the spirit world, how does this mental place differ from physical universes with stars, planets, and living things? S. Universes are created to live and die for the use of the source. The place of spirits is the source. Dr. Newton, we seem to live in a universe which is expanding and may contract again and eventually die. Since we live in a space with time limitations, how can the spirit world itself be timeless? S. Because here we live in non-space which is timeless, except in certain zones. Dr. Newton, please explain what these zones are. S. They are interconnecting doors, openings for us to pass through into a physical universe of time. Dr. Newton, how can time doors exist in non-space? S. The openings exist as thresholds between realities. Dr. Newton, well, if the spirit world is non-dimensional, what kind of reality is that? S. A constant reality state, as opposed to the shifting realities of dimensional worlds which are material and changing. Dr. Newton, do past, present, and future have any relevance for souls living in the spirit world? S. Only as a means of understanding succession in physical form. Living here, there is a changelessness for those of us not crossing thresholds into a universe of substance and time. Note, a major application of time thresholds used by souls will be examined in the upcoming chapter on life selection. Dr. Newton, you speak of universes in the plural. Are these other physical universes besides the one which contains Earth? S. Vaguely, there are differing realities to suit the source. S. Nods. Yes, they can and do. Dr. Newton, are you saying souls can enter various rooms of different physical realities from spiritual doorways? Before concluding the session with this highly advanced subject, I should add that most people who are in deep hypnosis are able to see beyond an Earth reality of three-dimensional space into alternate realities of timelessness. In the subconscious state, my subjects experience a chronology of time with their past and present lives which resembles what they perceive when conscious. There is a change when I take them into superconsciousness and the spirit world. Here they see the now of time as one homogeneous unit of past, present, and future. Seconds in the spirit world seem to represent years on Earth. When their sessions are over, clients will often express surprise at how time in the spirit world is unified. Quantum mechanics is a modern branch of physics which investigates all subatomic movement in terms of electromagnetic energy levels, where all things in life are thought to be ultimately non-solid and existing in a unified field. Going beyond Newton's physical laws of gravity, the elements of action on time are also considered to be unified by light wave frequency and kinetic energy. Since I show that souls do experience feelings of the passage of time in a chronological fashion in the spirit world, doesn't this contradict the concept of oneness for past, present, and future? No, it does not. My research indicates to me that the illusion of time progression is created and sustained for those souls coming to and from physical dimensions, who are used to such biological responses as aging, so they may more easily gauge their advancement. Thus, it makes sense to me when the quantum physicists hypothesize that time, rather than being an absolute of three phases, is only an expression of change. When my subjects speak of traveling as souls on lines which curve, I think of the space-time theories of those astrophysicists who believe light and motion are a union of time and space curving back on itself. They say if space is bent severely enough, time stops. Indeed, when listening to my clients talk about time zones and tunnels of passage into different dimensions, I think about the similarities here to current astronomical theories of physical space being warped, or twisted, into cosmic loops creating mouths of hyperspace and black holes which may lead out of our three-dimensional universe. Perhaps the space-time concepts of astrophysics and metaphysics are edging closer together. I have suggested to my subjects that if the spirit world seems round to them, and appears to curve when they travel rapidly as souls, this could represent a finite, enclosed sphere. They deny the idea of any dimensional boundaries yet offer me little else except metaphors. Case 23 says the spirit world itself is the source of creation. Some have called this place the heart, or breath, of God. Case 22 defined the space of souls as fabric, and I have had other subjects give the spirit world a quality of the folds of a seamless dress swishing back and forth. They sometimes feel the effects of a gently rippling motion from light energy which has been described as waves, or rings, rolling outward from a disturbed pool of water. Normally, the geography of soul spaces has a smooth and open consistency to people in superconsciousness, without displaying the properties of gravity, temperature, pressure, matter, or a time clock associated with a chaotic physical universe. However, when I attempt to characterize the entire spirit world as a void, people in trance resist this notion. Although my cases are unable to fully explain the place where their souls live, they are all outspoken about its ultimate reality for them. A subject in trance doesn't see the spirit world as being either near or far away from our physical universe. Nevertheless, in a curious way, they do portray spiritual substance as being light or heavy, thick or thin, and large or small, when comparing their experiences as souls to life on Earth. While the absolute reality of the spirit world appears to remain constant in the minds of people in hypnosis, their references to other physical dimensions do not. I have the sense that universes other than our own are created for the purpose of providing environments suitable for the growth of souls with beings we can't even imagine. One advanced subject told me he had lived on a number of worlds in his long existence, never dividing his soul more than twice at one time. Some adult lives lasted only months in Earth time for him, due to local planetary conditions and short lifespans of the dominant life form. While speaking of a paradise planet, with few people and a quieter, simpler version of Earth, he added this world was not far from Earth. "Oh," I interrupted, "then it must only be a few light years from Earth." He patiently explained that the planet, but closer to Earth than many planets in our own galaxy. It is important for the reader to understand that when people do recall living on other worlds, they seem not to be limited by the dimensional constraints of our universe. When souls travel to planets intergalactically or interdimensionally, they measure the trip by the time it takes them to reach their destinations through the tunnel effect from the spirit world. The size of the spatial region involved and the relative position of worlds to each other are also considerations. After listening to references about multiple dimensional realities from some of my subjects, I am left with the impression they believe there is a confluence of all these dimensional streams into one great river of the spirit world. If I could stand back and take apart all these alternate realities seated in the minds of my cases, it would be like peeling an artichoke of all its layers down to one heart at the core. I had been questioning Thies for quite a while and I could see she was growing tired. Few subjects can sustain this level of spiritual receptivity for very long. I decided to end the session with a few questions about the genesis of all creation. Dr. Newton, Thies, I want to close by asking you more about the source. You have been a soul for a long time, so how do you see yourself relating to the oneness of creation you told me about earlier? S. Long pause, by sensations of movement. In the beginning there is an outward migration of our soul energy from the source. Afterward, our lives are spent moving inward, toward cohesion and the uniting. Dr. Newton, you make this process seem as though a living organism was expanding and contracting. S, there is an explosive release, then a returning. Yes, the source pulsates. S, there really is no center. The source is all around us as if we were inside a beating, Dr. Newton, and you are moving toward the center of this energy source. Heart. Dr. Newton, but, you did say you were moving back to a point of origin as your soul advanced in knowledge? S. Yes, when I was thrust outward I was a child. Now I'm being drawn back as my adolescence fades, Dr. Newton, back where? S. Further inside the source. Dr. Newton, perhaps you could describe this energy source through the use of colors to explain soul movement and the scope of creation. S. Size, it's as if souls are all part of a massive electrical explosion which produces a halo effect. In this, circular halo is a dark purple light which flares out, lightening to a whiteness at the edges. Our awareness begins at the edges of brilliant light and as we grow, we become more engulfed in the dark light. Dr. Newton, I find it hard to visualize a god of creation as cold, dark light. S. That's because I am not close enough to conjunction to explain it well. The dark light is itself a covering, beyond which we feel an intense warmth, full of a knowing presence which is everywhere for us and alive. Dr. Newton, what was it like when you were first aware of your identity as a soul after being pushed out to the rim of this halo? S. To be, is the same as watching the first flower of spring open and the flower is you. And, as it opens more, you become aware of other flowers in a glorious field and there is unbounded joy. Dr. Newton, if this explosive, multi-colored energy source collapses in on itself, will all the flowers eventually die? S. Nothing is collapsing, the source is endless. As souls we will never die, we know that, somehow. As we coalesce, our increasing wisdom makes the source stronger. Dr. Newton, is that the reason the source desires to perform this exercise? S. Yes, to give life to us so we can arrive at a state of perfection. Dr. Newton, why does a source, who is ostensibly perfect already, need to create further intelligence which is less than perfect? S. To help the creator create. In this way, by self transformation and rising to higher plateaus of fulfillment, we add to the building blocks of life. Dr. Newton, were souls forced to break away from the source and come to places like Earth because of some sort of original sin or fall from grace in the spirit world? S. That's nonsense. We came to be, magnified, in the beautiful variety of creation. Dr. Newton, Thies, I want you to listen to me carefully. If the source needs to be made stronger, or more wise, by using a division of its divine energy to create lesser intelligence which it hopes full perfection itself? S. Pause, the source creates for fulfillment of itself. Dr. Newton, that's my point. How can that which is absolute become more absolute unless something is lacking? S. Hesitates, that which we see to be, our source, is all we can know. And we think what the Creator desires is to express itself through us by birthing. Dr. Newton, and do you think the source is actually made stronger by our existence as souls? S. Long pause, I see the Creator's perfection, maintained and enriched, by sharing the possibility of perfection with us and this is the ultimate extension of itself, Dr. Newton. So the source starts out by deliberately creating imperfect souls and imperfect life forms for these souls and watches what happens in order to extend itself? S. Yes, and we have to have faith in this decision and trust the process of returning to the origin of life. One has to be starving to appreciate food, to be cold to understand the blessings of warmth, and to be children to see the value of the parent. That transformation gives us purpose. Dr. Newton, do you want to be a parent of souls? S. Participation in the conception of ourselves is a dream of mine. Dr. Newton, if our spirits did not experience physical life, would we ever know of these things you are telling me about? S. We would know of them, but not about them. It would be as if your spiritual energy were told to play piano scales with only one note. Dr. Newton, and do you believe if the source didn't create souls to nurture and grow, its sublime energy would shrink from a lack of expression? S. Sighs, perhaps that is its purpose. With this last prophetic statement by Thies, I ended the session. As I brought this subject out of her deep trance, it was as though she were returning to me from across time and space. As she sat quietly focusing her eyes around my office, I expressed my appreciation for the opportunity of working with her on such an advanced level. Smiling, the lady said if she had any idea of the grilling in store for her, she might well have refused to work with me. As we said goodbye, I thought about her last statements concerning the source of life. In ancient Persia, the Sufis had a saying that if the creator represents absolute good, and therefore absolute beauty, it is the nature of beauty to desire manifestation. 12 Life Selection. There comes that time when the soul must once again leave the sanctuary of the spirit world for another trip to Earth. This decision is not an easy one. Souls must prepare to leave a world of total wisdom, where they exist in a blissful state of freedom, for the physical and mental demands of a human body. We have seen how tired souls can be when re-entering the spirit world. Many don't want to think about returning to Earth again. This is especially true when we have not come close to our goals at the end of a physical life. Once back in the spirit world, souls have misgivings about even temporarily leaving a world of self, understanding, comradeship, and compassion to go to a planetary environment of uncertainty and fear brought about by aggressive, competing humans. Despite having family and friends on Earth, many incarnated souls feel lonely and anonymous among large impersonal populations. I hope my cases show the opposite is true in the spirit world, where our souls are involved in the most intimate sharing on an everlasting basis. Our spiritual identity is known and appreciated by a multitude of other entities, whose support is never-ending. The rejuvenation of our energy and personal assessment of one's self takes longer for some souls than others, but eventually the soul is motivated to start the process of incarnation. While our spiritual environment is hard to leave, as souls we also remember the physical pleasures of life on Earth with fondness and even nostalgia. When the wounds of a past life are healed and we are again totally at one with ourselves, we feel the pull of having a physical expression for our identity. Training sessions with our counselors and peer groups have provided a collaborative spiritual effort to prepare us for the next life. Our karma of past deeds towards humanity and our mistakes and achievements have all been evaluated with an eye toward the best course of future endeavors. The soul must now assimilate all this information and take purposeful action based upon 3 primary decisions. Am I ready for a new physical life? What specific lessons do I want to undertake to advance my learning and development? Where should I go, and who shall I be in my next life for the best opportunity to work on my goals? Older souls incarnate less, regardless of the population demands of their assigned planets. When a world dies, those entities with unfinished business move on to another world which has a suitable life form for the kind of work they have been doing. Cycles of incarnation for the eternal soul seem to be regulated more by the desires of a particular soul than by the urgency of host bodies evolving in a universe of planets. Nevertheless, Earth certainly has an increasing need for souls. Today, we have over 5 billion people. Demographers vary in their calculations on how many individuals have lived on Earth in the last 200,000 years. The average estimate is some 50 billion people. This figure, which I think is low, does not signify the number of visitations by different souls. Bear in mind the same souls continue to reincarnate, and there are those who occupy more than one body at a time. There are reincarnationists who believe the number of people living on Earth today is close to the total number of souls who ever lived here. The frequency of incarnation on Earth by souls is uneven. Earth clearly has more need for souls today than in the past. Population estimates in 1 AD are around 200 million. By 1870, 70 more years, quadrupled again. Between 1970 and 2010, the world's population is expected to double once more. When I study the incarnation chronology of a client, I find there is usually a long span of hundreds, even thousands, of years between their lives in Paleolithic nomadic cultures. With the introduction of agriculture and domesticated animals in the Neolithic age, from 7,000 to 5,000 years ago, my subjects report living more frequent lives. Still, their lives are often spaced as much as 500 years apart. With the rise of cities, trade, and more available food, I see the incarnation schedules of souls increasing with a growing population. Between 1000 and 1500 AD, my clients live an average of once in two centuries. After 1700, this changes to once in a century. By the 1900s, living more than one life in a century is common among my cases. It has been argued these increases in soul incarnations only appear to be so because past life recall improves as people in hypnosis get closer to their current lives. This may be true to some extent, but if a life is important, it will be vividly remembered at any age in time. Without doubt, the enormous population increase on Earth is the basic cause for souls coming here more often. Is there a possibility that the inventory of souls slated for Earth could be strained by this surge in human reproduction? When I ask clients about the inventory of available souls, they tell me I should worry more about our planet dying from overpopulation than exhausting the reserve of souls. There is the conviction that new souls are always available to fill any expanding population requirements. If our planet is just one example among all other intelligent populations which exist in this universe, the inventory of souls must truly be astronomical. I have said souls do have the freedom to choose when, where, and who they want to be in their physical lives. Certain souls spend less time in the spirit world in order to accelerate development, while others are very reluctant to leave. There is no question but what our guides exert great influence in this matter. Just as we were given an intake interview in the orientation phase right after death, there are preparatory exit interviews by spiritual advisors to determine our readiness for rebirth. The case which follows illustrates a typical spiritual scene with a lower level soul. Case 24. Dr. Newton, when do you first realize that you might be returning to Earth? S. A soft voice comes into my mind and says, it's about time. Don't you think? Dr. Newton, who is this voice? Are about ready to return to Earth? S. Yes, I think so. I have prepared for it. But my studies are going to take such a long time in Earth years before I'm done. It's kind of overwhelming. Dr. Newton, and do you think you will still be going to Earth when you near the end of your incarnations? S. Long pause. Maybe no, I suspect, to build in amnesia from karmic constraints. I'll have more to say about this with the next case. Dr. Newton, let's go back to what you were saying about the instructors giving people a push to leave the spirit world. Would you prefer that they not do this? S. Oh, I'd like to stay, but the instructors don't want us hanging around here too long or we will get into a rut. Dr. Newton, could you insist on staying? S. Well, yes, the instructors don't force you to leave because they are so gentle. Laughs, but they have their ways of encouraging you when the time comes. Dr. Newton, do you know of anyone who didn't want to be reborn again on Earth for any reason? S. Yes. My friend Mark. He said he had nothing to contribute anymore. He was sick of life on Earth and didn't want to go back. Dr. Newton, had he lived many lives? S. No, not really. But he wasn't adjusting well in them. Dr. Newton, what did the teachers do with him? Was he allowed to stay in the spirit world? S. Reflectively, we choose to be reborn when it is decided we are ready. They don't force you to do anything. Mark was shown he did benefit others around him. Dr. Newton, what happened to Mark? S. After some more indoctrination, Mark realized he had been wrong about his abilities and finally he went back to Earth. Dr. Newton, indoctrination. This makes me think of coercion. S. Disturbed by my remark, it's not that way at all. Mark was just discouraged, and needed the confidence to keep trying. Note, Case 10 in Chapter 4 on Displaced Souls told us about how souls who had absorbed too much negative energy from Earth were remodeled. Case 22 also mentioned the need for restoration with some damaged souls. These are more extreme alterations than the basic reframing apparently used on Mark's tired soul. Dr. Newton, if the guides don't force you, could a soul absolutely refuse to be reborn?